welcome to the Bullcast podcast. I'm Katie Fickler, and with me is Nicole Ellis.
Hey, ladies.
Ladies.
We're overpowering court today.
And court wins it.
Hello there.
So it is the end of March, and March has been Women's Month. So if you've seen your feed on social media, there's been lots of like women empowerment, lots of celebrating women, all kinds of stuff like that. So we thought this was an interesting episode to wrap up the month. And it is about financial tips for female breadwinners. And we started talking about this and actually had a sidebar with Court and Cam, who we hate, couldn't be a part of it today.
I thought for a second there, Cam, who we hate.
No, we hate he couldn't be a part of it today. But how things have kind of shifted. It used to really be that it was the male figure who was the breadwinner and the wife was at home raising the kids. And most of them, their jobs was being a homemaker, which is a very, very real hard job. And I think
nowadays, more families than not are joint income.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, the woman of the house makes more than the man of the house. So female breadwinners is definitely a thing. That's a total shift. But before we give away our entire outline, we do a list, and we have one this week.
Are you trying to like shrink me and just like hold me back? The famous first in women's history.
Famous firsts in women's history. Okay. These are people, right?
Are you just going to repeat everything?
These are real women.
These are real women who did things first.
Yes.
All right. Let's go.
First on the list is Madam C.J. Walker. In 1919, she was made the first female self-made millionaire in America.
1919. Was she starting to get into bootlegging? Edith Wilson, first female secret president.
Interesting.
Woodrow Wilson suffered from a stroke, so she became the first woman to make executive decisions on behalf of the United States in 1919.
I did not know that.
Ooh.
Okay.
Next 1919, women taking over.
Yeah, apparently. It was a big year for women. Number three is Edith Wharton, the first woman to win a Pulitzer Prize for her book, The Age of Innocence. Have y'all read The Age of Innocence?
I have not. Have you?
I have. I have indeed.
1921.
Next on the list is someone I think we all know, Amelia Earhart.
Indeed.
Became the first woman to fly a plane across the Atlantic Ocean in 1932.
Wonderful. She unfortunately did not become the first woman to fly a plane all the way around the world.
Right. That's why I put in the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, I love this next one. Miss Judy Garland, first woman to win Album of the Year at the Grammys for Judy at Carnegie Hall, 1962.
And I will say she is not on the list because I didn't want to do too many of the same categories, but I believe Ella Fitzgerald was actually the first woman to win a Grammy in a popular category before Judy.
Wow.
Okay. Cool, cool. So next is Kathy Switzer, first woman to run the Boston Marathon. 1967.
It's pretty appropriate for you to get
this
one.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because I could tell y'all a lot more information about her, but but I won't.
Next on the list is Helen Hayes, and she became the first woman to win an EGOT, which is an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
Mm. Wow.
And that was completed in 1977.
Okay, in 1983, Sally Ride, first American woman to go to space.
Now, I have to wonder, do you think that her parents, when they named her Sally Ride, they were thinking, Ride, Sally Ride?
That's kind of what popped in my head.
I mean, like, that, they had to know that.
Sally
Ride. What year did that song come out?
Oh, man. Mustang Sally, it had to be the 60s.
Okay.
I don't know exactly when, but I assume the 60s. Next on the list is Aretha Franklin, first woman to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. Wow.
Much deserved.
Indeed.
1965.
That's when Mustang Sally came out?
1965.
Okay. Mm. All right. Cool, cool. Aretha, she got a little respect there, huh?
I love that pun.
Uh-huh.
All right. Next on the list, Serena Williams, also known as the GOAT. She is the first and only tennis player to accomplish a career Golden Slam. What is a Golden Slam? It means that a player has won each of the four Golden Slam tournaments and an Olympic gold medal. And she has done this in singles and doubles.
Wow. Catherine Bigelow, first woman to win an Oscar for Best Director for her movie The Hurt Locker in 2010.
Mm. I can't believe that it took until 2010 before a female director won Best Director. That,
you know what's even better? Is she beat her ex-husband.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she beat
you. Go,
Jim
girlfriend.
Cameron. Next on the list is Lauren Williams, first American woman. First American woman to win a medal in both the summer gold in 100-meter sprint, 2012, and winter Olympics gold in the two-woman bobsled, 2014. Interesting. Fun fact, she now owns a financial planning firm in Texas.
Well, look at her.
Interesting. That's cool.
She's just doing everything.
Yeah, most of our Olympic athletes are not professional athletes. They go on to lead normal lives.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fitting that I should end this list.
I don't know why this person is on this list.
She made this list.
No, I cannot.
Oh.
And, you know, I just had to put her on there because she has done so many great things in her life.
All right.
Taylor Swift, shocker, is the first artist to win the Grammy for Album of the Year 4 times.
And Beyonce is mad.
Beyonce has never won Album of the Year.
That's why she's mad.
Yeah. But, I mean, Frank Sinatra, Stevie Wonder, and Paul Simon have won it 3 times, and she's beat all of the men. Hmm. So that's pretty phenomenal.
Impressive.
That is. We talked about some incredible women in that list. And so to continue wrapping up this Women's Month, let's talk again about kind of female breadwinners. So an increasing number of women are becoming primary breadwinners in their households. So one might assume women are also taking on more of the financial decisions. You would assume, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, most women in heterosexual relationships who are earning more of the household income are not making the major money-related decisions for the family.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not, Katie?
I don't understand.
There's some reasons here. Traditional gender roles. Women may feel less comfortable managing the family finances, and men may feel the responsibility comes more naturally to them simply because of stereotypical gender roles.
Hmm. Not the stereotype.
Oh, here we go. Work-life balance between children, elder care, housework, career demands, time to devote to money matters may be scarce. Having your spouse take finances off your full plate can seem helpful, but it may be detrimental in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And lack of financial education, a lack of knowledge about investment, saving, and retirement planning can make it difficult and less appealing to become involved in financial decision making. Okay, yeah, those are all valid reasons, but definitely need to try and break that mold.
Well, one of the things that you have to keep in mind, and they sort of lightly brush up against this idea, but it is a concept that I have recently been sort of edumacated on. And
edumacated.
And it is the idea that a lot of women in a two-person household or multi-person family, whatever, a lot of them suffer from basically, I can't remember, I'm sure there's a more scientific phrase for it, but they suffer from decision-making overload. They are required to make way more decisions in any given day than their male counterpart is. And
yes,
and so it's possible that a lot of women are like, okay, you handle the finances because I'm pretty much handling everything else.
Yeah. I mean, granted, I don't have kids yet, but I have definitely had that thought where when I've got friends or something, and they know I'm the planner, they know I'm always the one planning stuff out and doing every detail. Sometimes when they're like, oh, we're going on vacation, I'm like, I do not want to be in charge. Mm-hmm. Somebody else decide. Yeah. I don't care, because it is so refreshing to have someone else make those decisions. But is that the wisest decision when you're killing it at work? You're, you know, taking care of the kids, taking care of family, doing all that, and you don't even have any awareness. It's fine if you have your husband handle the finances, but you need to know what's going on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happens sometimes. And we'll see it with our clients where it's just the male that comes in and talks to us about their family finances. And maybe in the prospect meeting, we have both of them. But then those quarterly, annually, whatever meetings we have, it's just one. Whether it's the male or the female, a lot of times it drops down to just one spouse.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's critical for women to be in the know about where the money is going. Why? Women are often paid less than their male counterparts, which makes it more challenging for them to save for the future and achieve financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
Although in this case, we're talking about those women that maybe are paid way more. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's the same philosophy of that. You've got to think about those challenges. Women are also most likely to take career breaks or work part-time to care for children or elderly parents, which comes with its own financial responsibilities. And so with that, okay, especially if a woman's the breadwinner, but then they're the ones that are going to have to take time off for kids or things like that, that's going to be a bigger impact to your family because that's more of the income that's going to be going away versus if it was even approach where you both were bringing it home about the same thing or...
I can bring home the bacon.
Bringing home the bacon.
Fry it up in a pan.
And finally, women tend to outlive men, which means they need to save more for retirement and plan for a longer lifespan.
We're going
to
outlive you.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Well, we already knew.
Listen, women have historically had a longer life expectancy. And there's no question, a large part of our focus is frequently on people who, at least when they come to us, maybe not by the time we're finished helping them, but when they come to us, they are at a complete loss for what to do about their finances because they've never taken care of it. And, you know, either they've lost their spouse to death because, again, women live longer, or they've lost their spouse to divorce and they have no idea what they're going to do next. And so we have to explain to them that, first of all, the world, no, is not going to end. You can make it through it, but also here's how these things are going to work and this is what you're going to do. And obviously, if you're ignoring those finances your entire life because you're just letting your spouse take care of them, then that can leave you in a bad situation if your spouse is ever gone. And I mean, that cuts both ways. If the woman is the one that handles all the finances all the time, then the husband will be.
This episode starts out when it's talking about the breadwinners, but it can go multiple different ways. Yeah. And yeah, there's always going to probably be naturally one person that's more interested than the other. But my little pet peeve here, number one, if you're talking to a financial advisor and it is y'all's money together, or it's even just all your money, and they're just talking to your spouse and not even trying to explain it to you, that's a red flag. Because I very much try to make an effort when I know that. So if Court and Robin are sitting here, then, and Court seems to be the one the most engaged, I'm going to at least make sure I check in on Robin and be like, do you want me to explain this to you? And when somebody tells me, I don't understand any of this stuff, so I guess whatever he says, that to me is like, hold on, no. Part of me doing this podcast, part of me being your advisor, I want to make sure you understand. And so I'll at least explain it in a way that hopefully they understand that, because whether you want to know the ins and outs of what securities do you have or whatnot, you need to at least understand, oh, we have money in the stock market, or we have money in, you know, retirement accounts or things like that. You need to have a general understanding, because it could be one of those as well that if it doesn't a divorce, then you need to understand, like, where's all the money and what could happen? And going real deep with this and dark, you kind of need to know what's going on, because if it's accounts that are in just your name and your spouse is in control of it all, then they could be, you know, being kind of risky with your money and conservative with their money. Mm-hmm. Now, I hope that doesn't happen, but that's why it's good to just kind of have some awareness of what is going on.
Well, I mean, you know, there are also some other more practical and or compliance related issues. Like, you know, when a husband comes in and wants to just basically manage all of the accounts that are under his name or under his and his wife's name, we cannot take orders or do anything at the behest of the husband unless he's got power of attorney. You know, just the fact that he is the husband doesn't mean that he can tell us what to do with an account that his name isn't on.
So absolutely.
He's trying to tell us what to do with his wife's account. We're like, sorry, we need your wife's confirmation on this. So, you know, yep, stay involved. Okay, right. So how do we do this? How are we going to
take charge?
Indeed.
So we're going to communicate openly. I mean, that's smart in a relationship, with whether it's a financial advisor or your spouse.
Communication?
That might be the most important thing, right?
Establish open communication with your partner about financial goals, responsibilities, and expectations. This might also include redistributing household responsibilities, either to your partner or to an outside person or service, to allow more time for you to manage your family's money. Mm-hmm. What you got next?
It's important to compile important information.
Okay.
Very important. Gather all of your account numbers, passwords, location of assets, anything like that in one area so you're not scattered trying to find it all.
Yeah, I can say that if you haven't done this, again, whether you're the man or the woman or the you know, just whatever, I used to be the one that was in the situation that I didn't know account numbers, and I didn't know what sort of automatic pay stuff Robin had set up, and I didn't know, you know, where everything was, or, you know, I didn't.
Robin was being the boss.
Yeah, well, she was the banker, and I was the lawyer, so
honestly a power couple.
I let her handle all that stuff. And then one day I was like, hey, wait a second. You know, something happens to you, I'm not going to know what the heck is going on. So you got to have those passwords. You got to know where everything is. You got to know what contracts you've got out there, automatic pay, all of that stuff. You need to know about it and know where it is and how you can turn it on and turn it off. So I guess that's just me mansplaining something that's already been said. Next on the list, I mean, really, do we have to go over this again?
No, I mean, this is kind of the basics.
Create a budget, guys.
Create a budget.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
I'm going to merge these next couple ones, you know, save for retirement, start an emergency fund, purchase insurance. So one of the things that I find very interesting when I do a financial plan is I will run a life insurance analysis for people. And what this is it's to show them how much life insurance do they need on each other should one of them pass away prematurely, or even just to have that covered, because insurance is definitely a tool you can use for investments. And some people prefer self-insurance. Other people prefer, you know, having whole term or having whole life insurance versus term. Lots of different things. We're not getting into that. But I enjoy very much doing a life insurance analysis. And, you know, when we run this, and if you just look at salaries, so whether it's the male or the female who has the bigger salary in, obviously, if the one with the bigger income passes away prematurely, there's a huge impact with that. You don't have that money coming in. And so sometimes I've had situations where there has been a male that maybe is a pilot or a CEO or something like that, has tons of money, and his wife has a small job or even is maybe a stay-at-home mom. And so if you look at these life insurance policies, it could mean that the husband needs, you know, $2 million on his life and the wife only needs $150,000. And I tell them, I said, look, that's what the numbers say, but that's not reality. Because let me tell you this, and I look at the husband or wife, depending on which one it is, and I say, if your spouse was to pass away, that $150,000, yes, that would cover her impact of her Social Security that would have been coming in, her income, all of those things like that. But what are you going to have to do with these kids? Who's going to take them to and from school and from their activities? Who's going to take off work when they're sick? You are going to have money set aside to then replace the economic engine that is the non-primary working spouse that is really the caretaker. And so whether that is the male or the female, that is something that we've yet to really quantify into an amount, because it is something that is hard to plan for. But I throw that out there to tell you, if somebody does a life insurance analysis like that, really just kind of take a second to really think about that, because there is a lot more than what numbers can actually crunch.
I 100% agree. I mean, yes, obviously, that is very true. The impact of a person who has no income for the job that they're doing, if it is a job of managing the family, then I guarantee you that person's absence is going to impact the survivor and impact them financially, because you got to have somebody that's doing all the stuff they were doing.
Mr. Mom in my head right now, the Michael Keaton movie. Oh, so great, where he was the big earner and then he got laid off and had to come home and he's taking care of the family. She got a big time job. And just the struggles that he had, but also the appreciation of understanding all the different people that are coming in, needing to work on the house, the kids, all of that.
It's a lot of moving factors that people may not know about.
Yeah.
I guess fitting that this one goes to me. So the next one is get your estate documents in order. So obviously, if you are the major breadwinner of the house, then you need to make sure that you have a plan for how your estate will be handled if you should. If you should die, but that's not what I want to say.
I was thinking, die?
Yeah, if you should pass away unexpectedly, basically.
Prematurely leave this world.
Yeah. So that is clearly something that I'm going to preach to anyone. And again, even if you are not the major breadwinner, it is something that you want to have. If you have young children, you're going to want to make sure that you have designated someone to care for those young children in case something happens to both of you. But also, if you are the major breadwinner, or if you have lots of assets, let's say you're not just a great breadwinner, but you've actually built up a significant nest egg, and you want to make sure that that is handled properly after you go, and make sure that your family, your spouse, your children are taken care of, then you need to make sure that you have that plan in place. So definitely go and get an estate plan.
It's not on here, but I think this is fitting to go next. Other things to kind of think about is pension plans are not so much around anymore. They're very few and far between. But whether it's you or your spouse, making sure you understand the beneficiaries and their survivorship of them. Because if you have a pension, then there's like 100% survivorship, single life. Those are things to really think about as well. And so as you're kind of understanding all of this, making sure that, you know where these are. If you were to get divorced, making sure you go back and check those beneficiaries. And learn about personal finances is the other big thing. Attend workshops, listen to Bullcast podcasts, read books, consult with financial advisors, understand the investments, retirement plans, the different instruments and tools you have, because you don't have to know the ins and outs of it. You know, that's why you hire a professional, but you do need to at least generally understand and feel comfortable with it, because this is your money and this is your livelihood. And so you need to have that understanding of what you have, where it is, how it's allocated potentially, and educate yourself. Don't necessarily educate yourself on TikTok. We talk about that a lot. And consult a financial advisor, a professional that can help in various ways, informing you about tax breaks or credits you might have known about, choosing investments based on risk comfort levels, and setting up the most beneficial retirement plans for your needs. Again, finding somebody who cares about you and doesn't make it seem like a cookie cutter, like, oh, with somebody like you, we do this or whatever. No, find somebody who listens to what keeps you up at night. What are you curious about? That really tries to find out what are your dreams and goals? How can we make them happen? I'm going to go a little darker again.
Oh, my word.
Sorry. The whole point of this is talking about female breadwinners, or, you know, it could be male breadwinners, whatever it is. We've talked about it some in some episodes, but make sure no matter who has the most income coming in, it doesn't always have to mean that they're the most powerful in the relationship.
I don't know why anybody would think that that was the case. I mean, I guess if you are making the majority of the money and you exercise control over that money, limit your spouse's access to that money, then you're sort of exerting your power. And
that happens a lot.
Yeah.
On the flip side, I mean, it could happen. I've heard it happen on the female side as well. But like, there are people that I make the money, so I get to decide. Or the comments like, oh, you're just spending my money, when they make money as well. Or it's like, you know, you don't bring anything to this family because I'm the one that makes all the money. So there are hurtful comments like that on both sides, where it's the male or the female. And so it's just kind of be aware of that you are a partnership in whatever capacity you're in. And just because you're the one slaving away at work, bringing in all the money, doesn't necessarily mean the other person who isn't bringing in a lot of money or isn't bringing anything in isn't contributing a lot to your family. That's just kind of my...
That's your bullseye.
That's my darker bullseye.
I agree with that, Katie.
It's a real thing.
It definitely is. I don't understand that mentality. I don't understand the behavior of like, I'm going to put you down because you don't earn as much as I do or whatever.
Well, you may not be the best person to ask, but take out who you are. Would you be intimidated if you were not making that much money at all and your spouse was making a lot more than you?
I can tell you that it has happened over the course of our lives together. Next year will be 30 years that we've been married.
Woohoo!
Over the course of our lives together, we have gone back and forth in terms of who was making more money. There were times when I was making more. There were times when she was making more. She got a job right out of college. I still had a year of college left. So for the first year, she was the only one making money. And then for a while, our salaries were probably matched. And then I started making more. Once we had multiple children, she started staying home. So there was a while there where she was staying at home and taking care of the kids. Then I quit my job and went to law school, and she got a job and was supporting my butt for 3 years. And then ever since I graduated from law school, we've kind of gone back and forth in terms of who is making more. And it's never once fazed me. I think she gets a little competitive about it, though, because when I'm in the lead, it ticks her off.
I'm competitive about that, because it's when Daniel and I first, up until we got, about 3 months before we got married, and then about a month into marriage, he was in between jobs, so he did not have a job at all, and I was supporting us. And then he gets a job, and then he starts making more than me, and I'm like, I supported you and you had nothing.
Welcome to the car business.
Yeah. And that's so, I mean, yeah, I definitely have some competitive. And speaking of the car business, because some of the individuals that are up there, their wives don't work. And so they'll do some little boy locker room talk and be like, my wife spends all my money and da 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 da. And the first time Daniel came home spouting that crap, I was like, sir, I make money too.
Time so, to put him in place.
So the money I'm spending is my money.
No, you didn't.
And Core, I think it's, I should just say you're a good cookie.
I don't know what that was.
You and Robin are just a power couple, like I said earlier. Well, I just want you to know that.
We've had a long time to figure some stuff out.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah. She's my lobster. Anyway.
Aww.
With careful planning and with, you know, management and communication with your partner, you can achieve financial stability and help ensure a secure future for yourself and for your loved ones. But I really think that the key to all of this is you got to know what's going on. Whether you're the major breadwinner or the other contributor, the other family contributor, it doesn't matter what your position is. Both people should know what is going on financially. And that obviously all starts with proper communication. Mm-hmm. And so we kicked off this whole thing with communication is key, and it really is.
Do not be scared to ask questions. I was telling somebody the other day about this podcast. The whole reason it was really started was because a lot of people are scared to ask the questions in front of their financial advisor. They're like, what is this stock again? And what's the difference between a mutual fund and an ETF? And it's like, look, these are complicated questions. So do not feel like you are at a certain age or a certain status symbol. Like, you are great at what you do. Your partner, your financial partner, your legal partner, tax partner should be the ones that are experts in their field, but they also should be able to then explain it to you in a way that you at least understand what they are and your questions are always answered. Nicole, what you got?
I was going to say, at the end of the day, this is what I do to pump myself up. I'm single, okay? So I'm not in any kind of breadwinning.
Oh, single ladies.
I'm not in a breadwinner situation. I am my own breadwinner.
You are, yeah.
You know, just turn on your music and, you know, Helen Reddy, her song, I Am Woman.
Uh-huh.
Ladies, you are strong and you are invincible and you are woman and you can do this.
I love it.
There's also a song, I don't know if you know this, by Kacey Musgraves called Breadwinner, and it's pretty.
You
should
listen
to it just for this episode.
Oh, there's the closing bell. Ladies and gentlemen, you've made it to the end of yet another episode of the Bullcast podcast. If you liked what you heard and you'd like to hear more, please feel free to go to your favorite subscription service and sign up to have our podcast delivered directly to your device every single Thursday at noon. If you would like to find out more about Court, Katie, Cam, or Nicole, please feel free to go to bullcastpodcast.com. We've got some bios up there. We've got a little place where if you want to, you can leave a comment or suggest a topic you'd like to hear us talk about, or, you know, just say hi. If you like pictures, we've got an Instagram handle that is @BullcastPodcast, and we also have an X handle that is @BullcastPodcast as well. And we have a Facebook page that is Bullcast The Podcast. Finally, we have mentioned that we work at a financial advisory business, and if you would like to find out more about that business, Pickler Wealth Advisors, more about our amazing team, I would list them, but it's a big team. Full of women and men. More about our boss, David Pickler, then please feel free to go to that website. That website is picklerwealthadvisors.com.
That's advisors with an O, not an E.
Somebody's got to say it because Court don't. Ladies and gentlemen, I have given you everything you need to go forth and be woman and roar. So for now, I'm Court.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Nicole.
And we done.